Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Last week, the Prime Minister's Special Envoy to the Middle East, Hadi Awang, who is also past president, met with representatives of the Taliban-run Afghan government during a four-day working visit to Qatar. The meeting and the decision to donate $100,000 to the United Nations humanitarian efforts in Afghanistan has raised some controversy back home as to whether it represents Malaysia's recognition of the Taliban government. So tonight we'll speak to foreign policy analysts to unpack the complex considerations that countries must weigh when it comes to engaging with the Taliban government. Our first guest tonight is Harizal Hazri. He's the CEO of the think tank ISIS Malaysia. And I understand that he has personal working experience in Afghanistan. Harizal, can you tell us a little bit very quickly your experience in Afghanistan?
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Sharad. Thank you for inviting me again. I was in Afghanistan right after the fall of Taliban, actually. That was late 2001. I had to leave soon after. And then I went back in 2002, stayed on. 2003, middle of 2002, organized the first lawyer Jirga process that led to the agreement of the leaders in Afghanistan at that time to hold an election in Afghanistan in 2005. So I was essentially there, 2003 until 2005. Yeah.
Okay.
Very
all right.
Interesting so times.
Definitely. And even more so now, I want to ask you what you make of that controversy that arose from Hadi Awang's visit, or now that it's been clarified as a dialogue. I mean, what did you make of that, of not just that visit, but also the controversy, the backlash that it raised back home?
Well, first of all, quite frankly, I don't understand the controversy as such, because I don't think it's a controversy. Malaysia has always been very engaged internationally. To make things simple so that we can discuss this quite quickly, is I bring the most recent example of Myanmar, right? We continue to engage Myanmar, one of our ASEAN members, the military junta in Myanmar is not democratically elected. But Malaysia plays its role to try and engage with them and to try and find the best solution moving forward. So I guess if it's not a controversy for us to continue to engage with Myanmar, I don't understand what's the controversy for us to engage with Afghanistan.
Right. So where the difference might arise, and I just want to make reference to the Moscow format consultations on Afghanistan happened in October last year. It included many countries, but neighboring countries, regional and superpowers were involved. I mean, there's a reason why those countries would be engaged in a discussion about Afghanistan and what is happening there. Malaysia is very far off from Afghanistan. What exactly is our skin in this particular game? Is it just about co-religionists? Is it just that it's a regime or a country that's nominally Muslim?
1962, we've had diplomatic relations with Afghanistan. That's very old for a very young country like Malaysia. So this is not a new relationship that we have with Afghanistan. We've had a relationship prior to the fall of the last king of Afghanistan, prior to the invasion of Russia in Afghanistan. We can continue to engage, Afghanistan, we were very clear of our stand during the occupation, Russian occupation in Afghanistan. We were very clear of our stand when the Taliban stormed into Afghanistan. We continued to do our best. In fact, after the fall of Taliban, Malaysia was again very active, in humanitarian works and support towards reinstalling democracy in Afghanistan. So this is not a new relationship. I don't think people realize, but, a young nation like Malaysia for diplomatic relations that started in 1962, there is a story there in itself.
Is there a distinction to be made between engaging a Taliban-led Afghan government versus a recognition of a Taliban government? Is there a distinction, diplomatically speaking?
Certainly. And that brings me back to the example of Myanmar. And that's closer to us and easier for people to understand. Our government have not recognized the military junta in Myanmar, but we continue to engage. And I think in international relations, that's very important. We can't only engage with countries that we recognize. For instance, you know, we never recognized the apartheid regime in South Africa, but we continue to engage. We voice our concerns. And we continue to, you know, voice our concerns until today. Now, the level of engagement might differ, but an engagement has to happen. And this is, I think people need to understand that recognition of a government and engagement are two very, very different things. And we have pledged, and this was presented in the parliament, right, $100,000 to rebuild Afghanistan. But it was very clear. The minister was very clear, Minister of Foreign Affairs was very clear that this does not mean that Malaysia has already recognized the government of Afghanistan. But we are a country that cares about humanitarian causes and humanitarian needs. And we cannot
Herriza, I understand that. I mean, 100,000 is a drop in the ocean, right? The European Union has also given money without necessarily giving a recognition to the Taliban government. I just want to ask you to put this in context for us, because when you were there in 2001, I mean, until that point in the late 90s, only Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and the U.S. had recognized the first Taliban regime. And now we have the U.N. Credentials Committee also deferring a decision on a new Taliban administration. And this was in December last year, just a couple of months ago. How does Malaysia play this game? Is it just essentially watching the bigger players and sort of following their lead in making decisions about its level of engagement?
So first of all, Sharad, I'm sorry, I don't think it's a game. I think it's something that is quite seriously considered, in Malaysia in terms of, you know, how we position our country and how we engage with other countries, recognized or not. Secondly, we are not Malaysia. We're not driven by any other major powers' actions or move in terms of whether they want to recognize or not. Malaysia has a set of approaches, and we are always very forward and neutral when it comes to getting the other party or another government to understand our stand on things. So where we are right now is obviously, a lot of considerations are being made. These are very complex issues that we are having. On one hand, we have, very urgent and current need of humanitarian and rebuilding, and we cannot forget that. That's very important. We are also a member of the Human Rights Commission, and that is also very important for Malaysia to play a role, in Afghanistan to uphold, human rights values. So there are very, very strong considerations. And as you know, we have launched the Malaysian framework, foreign policy framework. And there are things that we have mentioned in there which concerns Malaysia, not just Afghanistan, Myanmar and other parts of the world as well. So these are the considerations that the government will continue to take. But obviously, we cannot expect any country in the world to move in the direction that we like for them, or we imagine they should move into that direction without us engaging with them. So, it's a chicken and egg situation. If we feel like, the regime in Afghanistan needs to uphold human rights efforts, then we need to talk to them and make them understand that this is very important. And we have to continue that and push that forward before that can happen automatically.
Is that the role of the Special Envoy to the Middle East? Is that the kind of engagement and dialogue in terms of figuring out where the Taliban government is heading when it comes to human rights, democracy, the way it plans to, governance, way it plans to run the country? Is that the role of Hadi Awang?
Well, it is indeed the role of Malaysian government officials to carry Malaysia's aspirations internationally. So in that manner, of course, special envoys, not just Hadi Awang, you know, other special envoys to other parts of the world, you know, will carry, you know, the idea or the vision that has been approved by the cabinet on Malaysia's sort of like, you know, foreign policy outlook and how we engage ourselves and how we position ourselves internationally. So yes, you know, in short, the answer to your question is that should be the role. And, you know, but of course, you know, how it is being done and how these things are presented really differs. It's case to case basis because, you know, you're engaging with different group of people, different background, different culture, different contexts of crisis, so on and so forth.
Herzl, I mean, you because you spent some time there, could you help us who, you know, only read Afghanistan as it were through the headlines? And what is it that we should recognize about, you know, the fall of the previous administration? You know, 20 years that the U.S. built it up and then it collapsed like a house of cards, and the Taliban. I mean, there's a lot of scaremongering around the Taliban. I mean, what exactly should we, what is the calm, considered position on the Taliban, do you think?
Well, first of all, there is a huge, you know, development crisis in Afghanistan. And I'm one person that believes that any political process have to consider, you know, this development crisis very carefully. It is very difficult for us to try and, you know, lay out a political sort of like, you know, roadmap for a nation, a society without addressing these core developmental issues. And I think this is one of the problems that the United States of America face in their approach in Afghanistan. You know, first of all, you know, if we talk about this and we get into a bigger sort of like, you know, argument or debate about the current international aid architecture, And how, you know, things are being promoted and what values they are you know, that humanitarian work or even aid work imposes on certain communities. Now, I don't want to get into that. But what's very important is that I think one of the biggest problems is really addressing the core issues of development on the ground. If you don't have that, you cannot build any sustainable or strong government anywhere in the world. You know, this middle class argument about you know, about systems and governance and all of that seems very, very sometimes very simple and taken for granted because we do have access to, you know, to basic needs. But when you work with communities, and I can also bring my example working in the Bangsa Moro process, and that's not very far from Malaysia. You know, I spent years, you know, trying to promote a certain kind of framework and peace moving forward in the crisis in southern Philippines. We have to really understand the aspirations of the people on the ground. I can give you this example when you know, the United Nations and the international community was trying to promote democratization in Afghanistan. I had to walk deep villages. I went up to the Panjshiri Valley, met you know, village leaders and talked to them about elections and democracy. And they asked me whether if it's actually a cow that can actually bear milk, because that's all that they want right now, right? So you can see the difference in terms of what the West or the international community, you know, more or less people coming from, you know, backgrounds of where, you know, basic needs are sometimes, you know, regarded as normal, and trying to impose certain values to a community where their considerations and what they need is far more, you know, deeper than just a governance system. So this is where, and I'm not saying that the international community did not try, but again, you know, this is again, you know, a really problematic, I would say, post-World War II approach, starting from the Marshall Plan, to everything that we see that now builds a kind of, you know, I would argue a dysfunctional international development architecture. So if you ask me, Sharad, my experience on the ground is that, you know, there was a lot of effort and initiative and narrative that was basically imposed on the community in Afghanistan about a system of governance and democracy and all this higher level of thinking, political philosophy and whatnot. But really, you know, deep down on the ground, people wanted something else. And by the time the international community tried to really dive deep into this, it was almost too late. You know, because, you know, people felt that You know, the capitalist has come in, the richer got rich, extremely rich in Afghanistan. You know, the poorer were becoming even more poorer, and stuff like that. So it's one of the things that, unfortunately, I don't have a short answer to it, but it is a crisis, and it is something that that we are facing, and is quite real in the world today.
Harizal, thank you so much for sharing those insights. Harizal Hazri from ISIS Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break on Consider This. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. If you've just joined us on the show, tonight we're discussing some of the conversations that have been sparked by the Prime Minister's Special Envoy to the Middle East, Hadi Awang, who's also past president, his recent visit to Qatar, during which he met with representatives of the Taliban-run Afghan government. Let's speak to Dr. Azmi Hassan. He's a senior fellow at Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research. Azmi, I want to ask you about the, I would say, controversy coming from that visit, where Hadi Awang's office is insistent that that meeting with the Taliban government is a dialogue, to quote his office. I'm just wondering why you think there was so much backlash from this visit when we've heard from our previous foreign policy analyst, Harizal Hazri, that Malaysia has had long-standing engagement with the Afghan government.
Yeah, Melissa, it shouldn't be that controversy. And I'm also quite puzzled with the backlash because the European countries, plus United States, also have a meeting with the current Afghanistan government, the Taliban, there is. But again, I think the controversy is due because last August, when the Taliban took control of Kabul, I think PAS, which is that our special envoy to Middle East, is the president, put out a statement that Malaysia something should recognize the Taliban government at that time, you know, just a few days after Taliban took over. And also somebody close to the president of PAS said that we also, Malaysia should also recognize the government, the Taliban government. I think that's where the controversy arose in this particular matter, Melissa.
So, Azmi, I understand, of course, that, you know, Doha has been the venue for many, dialogue levels of engagement, when the Taliban was, in fact, the main insurgent group. So, and it continues in that role. The question, I guess, for Malaysians, and maybe that's where it's puzzling and needs some sort of clarity, is what exactly Malaysia can realistically do in this? I mean, giving $100,000, is very nice, but is there a real role for Malaysia, considering where we are located geographically, and so on and so forth? I mean, where do you think Malaysia needs to position itself, or how do you think it needs to position itself?
The truth is, Sharad, $100,000 in terms of Afghanistan is a small amount, a very meager amount. But again, to answer your question, where should we stand? The problem with the Taliban government right now is that no other country has recognized yet, even their close ally, Pakistan. Pakistan is very close to the Taliban, either Taliban 1 or Taliban, the current 2.0, they are very close. But Pakistan still has not recognized the Taliban government as yet. And again, where does Malaysia stand? We are far away from Afghanistan, correct? We are a very small country, but within OIC, Sharad, we have a voice there. But currently, OIC is very, very cautious in dealing with the Taliban government. So I guess for Malaysia to play a very significant role, put aside whatever amount aid that we are going to give to the people of Afghanistan, I think the role that we can play is via OIC. I think that's the most effective way that we can do, Sharad.
Okay. Azmi, can I follow up on something you said a bit earlier? I think it's interesting that you said the reason for the current backlash or current controversy is because of comments made by past leaders back in August when the Taliban took over Afghanistan. I do want to ask you whether this is playing to a domestic audience, whether there is, I guess, a support for Malaysia recognizing the Taliban within certain segments of this domestic voter base. Is that something? I mean, is that in does that jive with Malaysia's foreign policy trajectory?
Oh yes, I concur with you, Melissa. It's all about our political, I would say, domestic political issue, and also with state election of Johor coming soon. I guess our special envoy is considered a very soft target. He's a president of PAS, and PAS for sure will be contesting in Johor. So I think it is regarding, I think it is about domestic issue for domestic audience. I'm sure talking with the Taliban representative and recognizing the government is totally two different things, as Rizal said just now. So yes, Melissa, it is about the domestic political issue. But sadly, people are taking advantage. Politicians are taking advantage to it. And I'm hoping that Malaysian understood what's going on, that we need, we have the capacity to help the people of Afghanistan. They are in dire straits right now, Melissa.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, you know, on the brink of a famine, and there's been talk for months of the, as you put it, the dire situation on the ground in Afghanistan. Now, one of the things that affects that, of course, is the role of institutions like the World Bank. I mean, they've frozen funds for Afghanistan, so on and so forth. Is there, when you look at what is likely to happen, and we look at the past, when very few countries even recognized the first Taliban government, what do you think is going to happen now? Is it going to be a level of realism that that the Taliban are in control? There are no rivals. The former government has not claimed that it is a government in exile. Don't all these factors point to the an earlier recognition of the Taliban government as compared to the first time they took over?
Well, as I said before, Shura, the problem with our, the people questioning Tan Sri Hadi going, talking with the Taliban government is that because of their previous statement. And true enough, why the countries, other nations are very cautious in recognizing the Taliban 2.0 is because of Taliban 1.0. So I think everybody is watching. All nations are watching, whether it is a superpower or small country like us, we are still watching whether the current Taliban government will hold what they are promised. But as far as we can see, nothing much changed from Taliban 1.0, Shrat. So I think, yes, your nation has a role to play. We need to help the Afghanistan people, but it is via the NGOs, via United Nations Agency. But not through the Taliban government as it is right now, Sharad.
Yeah, can I just kind of follow up with one of the demands that the international community is making is that the Taliban government set up an inclusive government. I mean, they're trying to impose their values and what they think perhaps will restore stability to the region by saying that the Taliban must have an inclusive government. I mean, is that a reasonable demand to make on the Taliban now that they've captured state power?
Yes, it is very reasonable, and it is not hard to do from my point of view. Maybe from their point of view, it's very difficult when you say inclusive government. Look at when they set up the temporary government or the transit government, it's all a male-dominant cabinet ministers. And also, a few of the Haqqani, which is related to Al-Qaeda network, are in the government. So I think the demand or the request by the international community for the Taliban government to be more inclusive as in previous Afghanistan government, I think it is not that difficult. I think the Taliban government should work toward it in order for them to be recognized as a legitimate government, Sharad.
Okay. Thank you so much, Azmi, for joining us on the show tonight. We appreciate your time. Dr. Azmi Hassan from Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.